My name is Hans York. I'm a lifelong professional musician, touring artist. Not currently due to COVID. And that's for now. That's it, I guess. That's less than 50 words.
So is there a memory that you've considered sharing with me, or something about your connection to relationship to music that you wanted to share?
There's not a particular, like, one single memory. I think I have two things that come to mind. One is a Christmas preparation at the time back in Germany, and I was a little kid, and my dad he always would put a blanket in front of the door. That, because the door had kind of a look through, you could look into the living room, and he would put a blanket before that so that nobody could see anything. And then he would go in and would prepare the Christmas tree, right? And he'd put on a Christmas gospel CD of Mahalia Jackson and turned it up. And I would sit at the door with my head leaning against the door. And it was just wonderful. I was like in heaven listening to Mahalia Jackson. And so later on, years later, you know, my dad never talked about the war, but I knew that he, you know, my mom at some point told me that he was a POW in the US. And he, another thing that was kind of funny, the station, like, he probably came first to Dallas. White Rock Lake there had a distribution center where all the POWs were. And from there, they would be sent to, you know, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, wherever they would go to, into the cotton fields, or would, you know, work on farms or something like that. And, you know, I used to live literally a mile away from that, which is now a lake in Dallas, from that distribution center, and had no idea that very likely my dad was there and was sent to Mississippi, where he worked in the cotton fields. And I guess that his love for gospel music came from that time. So he must have heard the slaves singing while they were working. And I mean, that's my guess, but there is no other, I can't figure out any other connection that he would have to gospel music, because he was not religious in that sense, or kind of he lost it when he came back from the war.
And it's not as though gospel music is particularly popular in Germany. I mean,
No, not really. I mean, it is known, but it is more probably
that he would have this thing with gospel music. That's fascinating.
Yes, yes, and it's probably more from the it's probably more from people in church, you know. And he wasn't going to church anymore after he came back from the war. So that is one, you know. And I always loved it, and I realized that, I think, about 3 years ago, we were in Dallas, and I heard about the story of White Rock Lake and how the German POW prisoners went there. And I remembered the Mahalia Jackson album. And so I went onto iTunes and got that album. And literally, I did the same thing. You know, I put that album on, turned it up, and decorated the house.
And so what age were you when your father, the memory that you're recalling of your father, how old would you have been during that?
I was probably four or five. It was an early memory. And it's like, I mean, it went, it had almost a transcending effect on me when I, you know, I didn't listen before to it. I just turned it on and turned it up. And it was like, it was all in me, and my dad was there, and everything was there. You know, it was the whole memory, everything came alive in some ways. I think that music in that regard, because it is nonverbal and is based on frequency, on sound, on waves, like everything, like we are, right? It seems that when those waves coexist and resonate with each other, that time as such becomes, you know, that's maybe the moment where I think time is not really not there, you know, because the intensity of that feeling is just, was just the way it was back then when I sat there and was like, you know, it was the first time I heard anything like it.
I'm just curious now, this would have been how many years later did you find the Mahalia Jackson recording and listen to it again?
That would have been, let me see, 55 years later. Yeah, 55 years later. These things have reverberations that are sent through time. I can certainly feel that right now. You know, I'm carrying the DNA of the German deeds, so to speak. In some ways, I'm feeling that my generation heals is trying to heal, basically, the deeds of my father, right, of that generation.
I'm curious, when did you move to America?
I came to the States in 1999. So I'm here for, you know, I'm a typical immigrant. I'm neither nor, you know, I'm not really a German. I am not an American. I mean, I am, you know, I'm naturalized, got a passport and everything, but yeah, so it is really interesting that for me, and music in that regard, you know, to come back to my life's journey, because music always has been for me my God, or my, you know, it was, I learned what I've learned in some ways, I learned through music. You know, it opened up my heart. It I can certainly say that due to my exposure to all kinds of music, from jazz to ethnic to really all over the world, and me loving it all, there was nothing that I pushed away, you know, and also like me playing most of it. You know, I was playing in bands, playing Indian raga music, and I was playing Middle Eastern odd meter music, and not just, you know, one tune every once a year. I mean, as you know, for quite a while, and really digging into it, and so that I could understand some of the thinking. And I guess the music in that made the most impression, there's probably two things. One is Pat Metheny and Bright Side Live. When I heard that for the first time, it just, my whole body became vibrant, you know, like I had goosebumps all over. And I knew at that moment that I'm going to love this for the rest of my life. And I still do. I mean, I hear Pat Metheny and I'm getting all emotional. It's just instant. I mean, you know, nowadays it is, I mean, I have changed over the years, and my desires have changed, you know. I mean, I used to, when I met you at the time, I was basically touring. I was playing about 300 shows a year, right? And I was just organizing everything myself and out there and building my career. And I think that was before, even maybe it was the year I won Kerbal or something like that, the Kerbal Folk Festival. And, you know, that kind of pushed my career up, and then it became even more concerts. And when I think about that right now, it seems like that was a different life. You know, now I'm doing mostly like TV music, And I do a lot of teaching and producing, you know, where I review tracks for people that want to submit them to music libraries for film and TV. And so I do producing, and it's a different, you know, I stepped more in the role of a teacher. And, you know, I haven't played a show since probably 3 years or so. It was a mutual thing. I mean, I was fed due to the response of the audience and playing my music. And for the longest time, that was enough. And it was only that through, you know, I mean, we both are probably like a similar, born in a similar year. The way music changed and the way the music industry changed, you know, from cassettes to digital, that whole journey, the moment when I couldn't sell CDs anymore, my career as a touring musician was kind of over, right? It wasn't worth anymore. That it didn't make, you know, people came up to me and said, wow, check it out. You know, I got your music on Spotify or Rhapsody and it's great. And I was like, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, you could listen to my song 1,000 times and I get a cent. But the love, you know, the love for music and the love for exploring also like new music, you know, I'm still, you know, I might not listen as much to music anymore as I used to, but I'm still finding these little gems here and there where I listen to something and I'm fascinated how it's still, there's still great music out there. What I'm not sure is, you know, I guess we are always products of our time. You know, we are products of the zeitgeist that we were born into. And I think that in the last, maybe in the last 10 to 20 years, there the exponential curve has steepened in a way that nobody could foresee of how the changes actually are happening. And so when I look at some of the younger generation or when I talk to some of them, it feels different. Their love to music, it's not the same. There's something different and I can't quite pinpoint it. I could never say they don't love it as much or anything like that. Don't get me wrong there. I mean, loving music is something that is probably as old as human beings are to some degree. Loving sound, you know, loving something, hearing something, and then having preferences for one or the other, right? But, you know, music was always a way to tell stories. Probably for the longest time in history, in our history, it was just a means to tell stories. And just also like celebrating life. I feel like everything that humans do with that doesn't have a like the initial purpose of feeding you or procreating or, you know, just like some really basic things. Anything that we do that is in the realm of art, of, you know, I mean, I saw a documentary about, you know, people in Stone Age, how they created art, you know, how they started all of a sudden their pots, their clay pots were, or something there was like a painting on it or something on it. They started to decorate it, which had it's not useful for anything, but for beauty. You know, I think that music in some ways, carries some of that energy with it. You know, it's sometimes it doesn't have to have a certain, you know, it doesn't always have to have a certain meaning or is meant for something. I mean, I know that, you know, in times when there was Bob Dylan or, you know, a certain type of music, or even in earlier days when the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and rock and roll, and that it had a certain cultural reference, right? that's not the case anymore. Music is not considered, doesn't carry that weight anymore. So music in some ways for me was released again into the ether, so to speak, as something that we can do and trust that there is something within that sound, within the music, that is more than just us, right? But not where it's intentionally, I want to do that, I want to say exactly that, where it's more like we trust, for lack of the better word, we trust spirit, or, you know, that something that comes through the vessel that we are and creates something that carries meaning. I mean, music, as in that regard, it keeps you on your toes, and it energizes you, so that, you know, I never met a musician, like an older musician, that loved his or her craft that I didn't feel like, wow, you know, the looks were maybe 70, 80, you know, but the behavior was always like 20 years earlier. You know, they were still on it, and the eyes were, you know, they were looking at you, and it's like you could feel they're still fully present.
Yeah.
And I think that with music, it's like, because you have to be present, you really have to be, you know, you can't be thinking about the future or the past, for that matter. You have to be just in the moment and do it. I guess that when my uncle was a jazz piano player, and usually on Sundays we'd go to my grandmother's house, and there we had, you know, my uncle was there, my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, my uncle's wife, their kids. So it was a Sunday really family meeting, and we were always playing cards, canasta, after lunch, you know. And there was the green tablecloth and everything. It was professional, you know. And usually my uncle would sit at the piano, and he would play like Errol Garner or, you know, Oscar Peterson. Not as good as Oscar Peterson, but, you know, he was quite good, you know. The story that he shared with us, you know, he was 15 years old when he became a prisoner of war. Was the end days of the war, and Germany took like literally 14, 15 year old kids, put them on trucks and sent them to the front lines, where most of them perished right away. And he was encountered, like an American patrol encountered him, and they realized, wow, this is a kid, right? And so he was still in that camp, which was an old school, and he was walking through a hallway. There was a piano there, and he sat down and played piano, and one of the officers heard that and came and said, "Hey, son, can you read music?" And he said, "Yeah." And so they went to the officer's club, which was the music school, the music room of that school, with the grand piano. And it had sheet music, you know, from all the musicals and stuff like this. And they would sit down and play it. And that saved his life, literally. From that time on, he was treated differently. He played every evening for the officers, you know. Unfortunately, he also became an alcoholic by then, because they gave him, you know, he had always like whiskey or beer, I don't know what. But where his love for music and performing came from that, you know. And I got it through him to some degree, you know. I was always fascinated by that, and I guess through him playing, you know, I always sat there next to him and listened to what he did. And he never showed me anything on the piano, which I, you know, he just played, and then he got up and say, "Okay, now you play," you know. And so I sat down and started playing, and, you know, I saw where his fingers go, and then I started a little bit, and oh yeah, that sounds similar. And he was always encouraging, yeah, just play, doesn't matter, oh, wrong note, forget it, just play, keep on playing, you'll hear when it's right. And so, yeah, that really sticks with me too.